Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we coming from our basement to your headphones. Barely even know who we are, but changing the unknown. In a while, topping the charts.
Thank you for downloading the Podcastianos. Now here are your hosts, Jordan Hall and Eric Wayne.
Deep background, feeling like I'm never gonna get without the sir, cause I'm showing in the background, knowing that I'm gonna
Welcome into another piping hot episode of the Podcastianos. I'm Jordan Hall, and I'm joined, as always, by a man who's still inspired by Canadian waterfowl. It's Eric Wayne. Eric, how are you, buddy?
Just keeping my, you know, goose hopes up, even though it's kind of petered out a little bit, let's be real.
Yeah, so we're clearly moving into week three now of the Rally Goose era. The players don't seem to be losing any steam in that regard, but we maybe a little bit do.
Yeah, I'm seeing kind of a mixed reaction. Some people, you know, want the goose to happen, and others are like, it can die now. And I'm having fun where appropriate, but it's kind of dying.
Yeah, I mean, it's like any other meme. It gets popular, sure, for a while. We make a shirt about it, and then eventually it dies. Like that is the life cycle of everything on the internet. And
that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. There'll be something else new that comes up, and that will be great.
Yeah, it'll probably just be for another team, a team that's more interesting and that's winning more baseball games.
Ouch. Ouch.
I did enjoy the Indians' Twitter. They tweeted something effective like, retweet if you've ever been personally victimized by the Rally Goose. And then there was Jose Ramirez like slamming his helmet down. I thought that was pretty funny.
The Indians' social media guy, individual, maybe it's not a man. Unnamed social media person seems to do a pretty solid job.
And it's probably more than one person. It's probably a team.
Yeah, probably.
I was actually looking into – I was running some stats, as one does, about the Rally Goose era. We are now 7-6 during the Rally Goose era, which I didn't do the calculations, but I believe that is a higher winning percentage than our season winning percentage. So
sure. But the Rally Goose is like mediocre.
Yeah, it's not great.
Because a goose, frankly, is a mediocre animal.
We actually have a question about that later on, so we'll get into that later. Yeah. So obviously, big story from the course of this week was that the Rally Goose inspired a walk-off homer by the Candyman himself in extras on Saturday. 2-0 pitch from Cody Allen in the 12th, and Candy gave it a ride. That was probably the most exciting moment of the season so far.
And I missed it. I was watching minor league baseball at the Whitecaps, which was fun, but I missed it and watching the manual scoreboard. And that's not quite the same as experiencing, you know, the visual.
Fortunately, we live in an era where 30 seconds after it happened, you could see on Twitter what happened. And
yeah,
you might as well have lived it in real time. It's
I did. The same. It was a no doubter, though, right?
Yeah, he got all of it. We have actually questions about Candy in the Twitter questions section, too. But he's a really good player.
I'm more impressed with the pitching performance that let them get to that point. I mean, they must have had some solid bullpen work to be able to win it in the 12th. I mean, they held down the score for all those innings.
Yeah, I mean, it's
pretty impressive.
This isn't quite a vintage Indians team, but there's still plenty of sock in that lineup. So who do you blame more for the dramatics? You know, that resolve for comebacks and sticking out the the tough games. Is that the goose, or are we talking about the master of motivation?
Stop it.
Not Osmus, who sulks when we're losing, but the guy who rallies the troops, Ron Gartenhire.
You just stick to that story. That narrative is going to work for you for a while.
I love
it. Because you can just go to it.
It's actually like people are buying that. And I'm not necessarily discounting it. But when I said it the very first time, it was entirely tongue in cheek. And like it's kind of become a thing at this point.
I've been super impressed with Gartenhire. And I don't. OK, so if the plucky come from behind spirit, if I had to attribute points to that out of 100, I would say Gartenhire is maybe 10 points of that.
Really? That's really interesting.
Only 10.
Because there isn't necessarily a ton of difference in personnel from this season to last season. And what would you – so clearly
– you want to know my take is expectations.
Okay.
I think reduced expectations are lightening the load on these guys' shoulders. And that attributes to a majority of the go get them. We compete pluckiness.
So it's a unburdening that's fair.
To me, that's most of it. Yeah. Expectations. I think some of it is the change in personality from very stoic veterans to maybe funner, less experienced guys. Therefore, you get a little bit more chill environment. And Gartenhire is maybe a part of it. But, okay, so we have this fun and plucky attitude. But is that necessarily making us a lot better?
I mean,
no, it's just a funner attitude.
I mean, we are winning percentage better this year than we were last year. We're games back in the division better at this point than, I don't know, we certainly than we finished. I don't know about at this point. Anyway,
that's true. I mean, we had the worst team in baseball last year. I suppose I should, recalibrate my thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, clearly most of this is tongue in cheek. Guardy isn't responsible for all of this, but he is maybe bringing
more of a culture change
than I would have anticipated. Okay. So anyway, brings us this week's leadoff question. What is your all-time favorite Tigers walk-off moment?
Well, I mean, there's a couple candidates, all right? Number one has to be Maglio's walk-off in the ALCS, right?
Yep, off Houston Street.
Yeah, and boom, we're going to the World Series. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Was Rajay Davis's Grand Slam a walk-off? I'm trying to think. That was a couple years ago. I also remember one where Cabrera and Ryan Rayburn hit them back-to-back to complete like a 7-run comeback. But I'm not sure if that was a walk-off.
I remember that one. I don't necessarily remember the Rajay one.
So, yeah, I mean, it's Maglio, right? I mean, that's the one that sticks to me.
Yeah, all super fun moments. Mags, obviously, like, that is a forever you remember where you were moment. Like, I was in my living room. It's not exactly like I was in an exotic location. But I remember literally jumping up and down. I mean, we were going to the World Series.
I was in my friend Brian's living room at his old house, and I remember where I was.
Did you embrace?
You know, it was very manly, sure. Yeah, very macho embrace, absolutely.
This is
my same friend Brian who I took in the Galarraga almost perfect game with. So
wow,
we've experienced the highs and the lows.
Say, you and Brian have quite the rapport. We should get Brian on the show.
Yeah, we'll get Brian. I'm sure he'd eat that up.
The other one I had was a couple of summers ago, Iggy beat out an infield single. He kind of did like a big flex after, and it really felt like it was going to be the start of this surge, you know, push on and win the division. It wasn't, but it could have been, you know.
Hicks bunt this year doesn't really, you know, stick in your mind as powerful.
It does not. I mean, it's literally the opposite of powerful, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
All right. Let's run down some Tigers talk.
Not yet. We have other things to announce.
Oh, fine. You put me in charge. Okay, go.
So June 16th, the first annual mega podcast meetup. We talked about this last week at Fifth Third Ballpark to watch the West Michigan Whitecaps play the Dayton Dragons. We will be there. If you've ever listened to the show and thought, you know what, these two guys, I would like to meet them in person, you can, by all means, come and say hello. We will sign all of the autographs that you want. Just kidding. Don't get us on anything that you own. That would be absurd. But Hookslide, Raj and Chris from the Sports Radio Detroit podcast are going to be there. We're going to do, I believe, an hour and a half live show, hopefully talking to some Whitecaps players. Should be fun. Anyway, come out to the ballpark and see us, see the Whitecaps, hopefully see Matt Manning pitch. I mean, that could happen. Yeah. That would be fun. And also, we have the Podcastianos World Cup Challenge Contest. Here's what we need for you, from you, your World Cup predictions for the semifinalists, which would be four teams, the finalists, which would be two teams, the winner, which would be one team, and then Golden Boot, which would be which player from the tournament scores the most goals, how many goals that player ends up scoring, a breakout player, and a bold prediction. And email those to podcastianos@gmail.com. And then the winner will receive a brand new shiny Jeff Coburnus signed baseball, which I know some of you were questioning whether, in fact, I did have this and this was a real prize. I do have this, in fact. I collected it myself. Much
it
like,
is real. Is it a prize?
It is a baseball for sure. You cannot sleep on the fact that it is, in fact, a baseball. But anyway, we got a couple entries, some interesting ones. Obviously, the World Cup starts on Thursday this week, so I will need to get your, Eric's, predictions. Yeah, yeah. And then we'll see who wins. I'm quite sure it'll be me, but you just never know. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can on Twitter. I am at JordanHall23. Eric is at ComericEric, and the show is at Podcastianos. On Instagram, I am at Jordinio4. Facebook.com/podcastianos. If you have a question for us and you don't have a Twitter, podcastianos@gmail.com. And we'd love it if you take the time to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or whatever other platform you're listening to the show on. If you've left us one in the past couple weeks, I apologize. I forgot to look. Eventually, we'll go back in there and read out some of the ones that we've gotten recently. We appreciate you guys doing that. That is what helps us boost up the various charts and gets more people to listen to us and more people to essentially fund our Spotify subscriptions.
I find that read by you very comforting.
Do you?
You know, it's something I can rely on every week.
Every week, it's almost exactly identical. I don't even read it anymore. It's almost borderline memorized.
That's beautiful.
I'm Blaine Hardy, and you're listening to the Podcastianos.
Ready to talk about Tigers some more?
Yes.
All right, terrific. Middle of this week, the Tigers traveled a very short road trip, three games in Boston, where we promptly lost two out of three games. The one that we won was against a young pitcher,
Jalen Beeks. Name? Yep.
Yeah. And we got the best of him pretty quickly. I think we scored five in the first. The other two games were not as impressive. And to me, I thought we looked a little bit overmatched in Boston. And the question I have for you is, what prompts this question is that they were showing footage of Nico Goodrum kind of getting the tour of the scoreboard at Fenway, and they make a big deal out of it. And, you know, Fenway is this kind of very quirky park, not only because of the dimensions, but also the age. It's historic and it's famous. And, you know, I saw clips of the Tigers players out there with their cameras taking pictures. It shows up on Instagram. And I'm wondering, is Fenway a psychological advantage for the Red Sox? Is it a disadvantage over and above other, you know, away advantages, if you know what I'm saying, for them? Like, you know, are visitors so mesmerized by the park that they play worse, or is it just because the Red Sox are pretty good?
I mean, clearly.
Do you think there's anything to this?
I think there's a little bit to it. I mean, if you're coming into a ballpark and you're overawed by your environment, it's almost like playing in a World Cup final or something like that. Like, it raises the stage, I guess I would say, where you're not just playing the game, you're playing the occasion, if you will. I can imagine maybe the first game at Fenway being that way, but after the first time you're out there, like going back the next night, it has to lose some of the mystique, some of the intensity, like maybe game one of your very first series there, but I guess I just don't see it. You know, the cliche, 60 feet, it's still 60 feet, 6 inches, you know, 90 feet on the base paths. I don't know. Maybe there is something to it.
I'm kind of buying this. I'm a believer in the psychological disadvantage for visitors going to Fenway, because it's a weird park. Mm-hmm. And I think even back to the ALCS games that we had and lost in 13 in Boston.
I've completely blacked out on that. I have no recollection of that.
It's smart. Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind moment there. I think there's something there where Boston and Fenway gets in people's heads.
I mean, maybe. I feel like that's for the week. It sounds kind of macho, but I just don't see how you can make it to the big leagues as a player and then one ballpark doing that to you. I can see an advantage, like a physical advantage to, you know, understanding how to play the monster better, the weird right field. Like, I do think there's something in that, a small
advantage. I'm incorporating
advantage.
All of that into this mix, you know, the old locker rooms, everything.
Yeah. It's marginal gains. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And if the Red Sox can get 3% advantage from that aura, the mystique, then, I mean, that's 3% the Tigers. If the Red Sox get 3 and we get -3, they're already 6% ahead of us, and they're better to begin with.
There you go. So, yeah, just a short road trip in a long stretch of home games for the Tigers. Let's skip ahead and let's look at our 3-game series with the Indians. We dropped 2 out of 3 against them. We are now 5 games back. Is this the beginning of the slide back to preseason expectations for this team? Is the luster coming off our pluckiness? We saw today some errors in the field, and we looked a little we looked crummy today.
I would say, we looked sloppy. Short answer to your first question is yes. This is the beginning of – I might even just – saying regression to the means. Cleveland are a much better team than their roster or the standings would say, and quite frankly, we're not quite as good as our record would indicate. I mean, it is more just things going back true to form. Did we play our best series against Cleveland? No. I mean,
no.
We looked very sloppy today, and you know that's going to happen with a young team, and specifically against Cleveland, a team that's kind of been. I mean, obviously they're good, but even beyond how good they are, they've been our bugaboo the last couple of years. I think there's something mental in that series, but I mean it's just a good team getting better versus a young team that's not great. I mean that's kind of what it came down to for me.
How about this? We have played 18 games in 17 days. Mm-hmm. And actually, in those 18 games, we have a 10-8 record, which is pretty good.
That's terrible.
A lot of them were at home, right? We've played every day and sometimes twice a day without a day off. And so tomorrow they get a day off. And to me, there was a little something about just playing so much and grinding and grinding. It looked like it caught up with them today.
And not even just grinding. They've had to compensate for some pretty serious injuries during that grind. They've played guys in roles they're not used to. I mean, Artie Lewicki has started twice in that grind. I mean, like
Blaine is starting. They're mixing them all in.
Verhagen had a start in there. I would like to come out and say this. I will never stop believing that that Drew has a competent major league arsenal, but I'm ready to – like, clearly a change needs to be made. Like, he needs a new set of people looking at him, maybe a fresh set of expectations. The Drew in Detroit experiment, I I could it would save me a lot of hassle, specifically on Twitter, if we just went ahead and pulled the plug on that. For all of you people who tweeted me if I saw his inning today, yes, I did. Thank you for noting that to me. I only respond to positive Drew tweets, though, so you should know that. But I have to say, I'm probably ready for this experiment to be done.
Little rough. Well, let's get into it a little bit more. Let's break down the highs and the lows of the Detroit bullpen.
Yeah, let's see.
Let's start with the bad. We've touched on Verhagen, and I am with you. It's probably ready for something new with him. He's tools, but
it's bad. It's not an arsenal problem. It has to be an approach problem. If you sequenced his pitches well, they each play up, or they're each good enough that they can be used correctly to be effective. Clearly, he doesn't have an idea how to do that. McCann, you know, whoever's calling his games don't. He needs a new set of eyes trying to figure that puzzle out. And will the puzzle ever be figured out? I don't know. But you can't tell me that fastball and that curveball don't give him the ability to get out major league hitters as a reliever. But
there you go.
It's time to end. It's going to cause us nothing but pain to keep running him out there, specifically me.
Speaking of a little bit of pain, Shane Green, let's see, not today, but two days ago. Yeah. I'm trying to get my day
straight.
Yeah,
we won yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Blew a save. He gave up a 3-run home run. It was a no doubter. That was a mistake pitch, but that was built on a walk, another hit, a long foul that could have been a home run. This was more than just one mistake that Shane Green had made. It was an ugly inning. Shane now has 3 blown saves,
which isn't terrible. No.
In 18 tries. A couple observations, I guess. The long ball is hurting him. He's got, I believe, 6 home runs in 31 innings. Where am I? Yep.
That's not great.
6 home runs in 31 innings. So there was some talk trying to diagnose Green a little bit. Gardy was talking about his slider primarily, because he's been throwing a lot of two seamers trying to stay away from the slider. He's got to go back to the slider, but when he gets kind of on the side of it, it moves laterally instead of getting that nice downward bite. And he's got to throw it, right? Mm-hmm. So what's your take on Green? What's his role? What's the how solid is his role? Does he need to improve? What do you make of him?
So just from a purely mechanical standpoint, I look at Shane Green and it is all a release point issue. I mean, clearly I'm not a major league level pitching coach, but I think the problem is in that release point. And I think you can attribute that, like, dude has trouble with feeling in his fingers. Like, going back to his problem last year, I have a hard time being too critical of the guy who still was not having full feeling in his. I mean, that is such a massive part of throwing a baseball, is the release and, you know, the friction coming off your fingers as you're releasing that ball. Getting on to your questions about role, like, it's him and Joe. Like, and Joe are the two good relievers we have.
Right.
Does it matter if Joe's in the eighth and he's in the ninth, or he's in the eighth or Joe's in the, like, he's clearly not been bad enough to take him out of high leverage situations. Right. And if it's the eighth or the ninth, like, I don't know. I would prefer go ahead.
We've praised the Indians for letting Miller be that. That relief ace, mm-hmm. right? That's the title we use now, relief ace. Is it okay that Joe is a relief ace? Like, that's modern thinking about bullpen usage.
Yeah, the one thing with Joe, I would like to see the pace of usage slow down on him.
We are grinding.
We're not good this year. We're not going to win the division. Let's not. I mean, I feel like I say this about Fulmer all the time. There's only so many bullets in that arm. Let's not use them all up this year. Clearly, we want him to get reps so that he can improve and help us when we are good. But if we blow his arm out this year, Joel Zumaia style, like, it's not going to do us any good in the future.
Okay, so we have this compare and contrast with Shane Green and Joe Jimenez, right? Mm-hmm. So here's some interesting things. They, coming into today's game, they both have thrown exactly 31 and a third innings.
Wow.
Identical.
That's eerie.
Strikeouts. They both have exactly 34 strikeouts. Identical. Their walks are similar. Green has walked 10 and Jimenez has walked 8. The real difference is the home runs and the earned runs. And so Green is getting hit for more power. Green's given up 6 home runs. Jimenez has only given up 1. And that has affected, you know, their respective ERAs and, you know, FIPs. So, I mean, Green has essentially almost twice the ERA that Jimenez does. And you know, 31 innings, it's a relatively small sample. I mean, maybe Green is getting a little unlucky, but it's not like there's a huge separation between the guys. I mean, it's not clear that one is trash and one is, you know,
absolutely
off the charts. I mean, Jimenez is clearly excellent and way better, especially lately. Mm-hmm. But I don't see any need to be clamoring for a role reversal.
No, and you don't want to force Joe into the ninth inning, especially considering you're going to – I mean, obviously, I just appealed for less usage. But if you put him as your closer – essentially, the only time you're going to use him is in the ninth inning or, you know, 10th, you know, whatever, when you're trying to protect the lead. You're going to limit how many times we can use our best reliever. I mean, clearly, Joe has a better arsenal than Shane Green. Like, I've always loved the stuff that Shane has. But, I mean, Jimenez's pedigree coming through the minor leagues was, you know, unparalleled as far as relievers go. And you know, I was actually talking about this with my dad, and we've reached the point where Joe Jimenez isn't just our best reliever. Like, he's legitimately one of the best relievers in the American League at this point. But there, I don't know. It comes down to there just isn't really a point to doing it yet. If Shane continues to be, you know, not so great and, you know, gets worse, maybe we do it as a confidence rebuilder attempt for Shane Green. But I don't know that there's anything to be gained in letting Joe pitch for an improved spot. Does that make sense?
Yep. Let him thrive. He's thriving in this role. Yeah. Let him thrive in this role for a while. He's only 23 years old. There's plenty of time for him to close.
Exactly.
Anyway, do we want to talk more about the bullpen? We always have bullpen issues.
Yeah.
Alex Wilson is back. Is he going to give us something? Maybe. let's talk about bright spots. Lewis Coleman has been terrific.
I love that arm angle. It's just so different than anything else we have out there. I mean, the stuff is fine. It's maybe a slightly above average, but just having somebody that can give you a different look to disrupt the timing, I love seeing that. I mean, he's a grinder. I like that. I kind of like him.
He's got a sub-1 whip. His ERA is low. He's starting to get a few more innings going now as Gardy trusts him. So if we just to do a fun experiment here, if you had to rank your confidence level in bullpen pieces, let's do it together.
Okay.
So number one is going to be Jimenez, right?
For sure.
Okay. Who's number two? Who are you second most confident about?
Still Shane Green.
Still Green. I would agree with that. Number three.
Three has to be Lewis Coleman.
Coleman next, I would say for sure. Who's number four?
A tie with all of the rest of them. No.
Right? Who are you trusting next?
Probably marginally Buck. Maybe. Warwick last time out was pretty good. Like, it's just kind of a revolving door of actually probably Alex. I mean, Alex was halfway decent before he hit the DL. Trying to remember if he's
Saupold's numbers are the best, the next best of the bunch.
Yeah.
Which seems weird because we are, here comes Warwick, da 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 da. But he's the best of that grouping.
Yeah.
And you know, people
wise,
always,
I don't know.
People are always like busting on, why is this guy pitching? Why is that guy pitching? Oh, da da da. Who else are we going to run out there?
Yeah. Somebody has to pitch.
Yeah. it's not like, oh, let's pluck one of our aces from the Mud Hens and run them up. Like, we got who we got, friends.
Yeah. In theory, if Blaine goes back to the bullpen, he probably would be that number four, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But Reininger got sent down today.
He is terrible. He's Victor Reyes level terrible. And I mean that with all due respect.
Barbato. How about Sandy Baez?
That was eye-opening. I will say that, especially after he saved a sinking ship after my boy Verhagen torpedoed that one. He looked very good. I poo-pooed that 26-man move. I'm like, come on, really? But I stood corrected, very, very much corrected.
I just threw myself under the bus there with like, oh, who else are we going to call up? Well, Sandy Baez is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, we're to the point where it wouldn't shock me if he did get some bullpen run. I know that they've been using him as a starter down in Erie, and you don't necessarily want to take him out of that mold until you're going to use him consistently. But
yep.
I mean, we could conceivably use him consistently. That wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yep. Okay. Our bullpen, we have a couple good pieces and a lot of ugh.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
Which, to be fair,
which is typical of the Detroit Tigers
and of baseball in general. I mean,
yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
Not every team has a bullpen.
Moving along, the draft. We talked about our first round pick in the last podcast, but I want to talk a little bit about the draft as a whole. MLive had a really fascinating article, I thought, where they interviewed. This would be Evan Woodbury, mm-hmm. Interviewed Scott Plias?
Sure.
Anyway, yeah. He's the director of scouting or whatever for the Tigers. And he made a couple fascinating points. I think one of the key characteristics of this year's draft is we have drafted less college SEC arms, bullpen arms, in hopes to run them up fairly quickly. And we have drafted more toolsy project lottery ticket type guys who have some projection and some tools that you can dream on a little bit, mm-hmm. but they're going to be several years out. So this was one of the questions when asked about the Tigers' philosophy of drafting for high upside this year. Scott said, every draft is different. The talent level is different. We always try to take the best player. Well, yeah, duh. But in past years, we were win, 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 win. And we wanted to get guys quick, meaning move up quick. This year, we're maybe more athletic, which you always want to try to do. It worked out that way, too. So that was the first kind of observation, which I thought was fascinating. The second part of that I thought was interesting was on the role of analytics. And this is Scott Plice again saying, we've gone from 0 to 100 really fast. And that's with the support of owner Chris Illich and Al Avila and everyone. Our analytics staff has been fantastic. They have been involved in every single pick. They do a fantastic job. The body of information that we have now versus 4 years ago, you can't even compare it. Which I thought was really kind of interesting. Here I am thinking all along, like the analytics guys have at least a hand in it. And here they're admitting, like,
nope,
we haven't done any of that, you know, prior to 4 years ago.
Not even in the slightest. Yeah, that is alarming. That's a strong indictment on Dombrowski. Obviously, he had his strengths, you know, the Anibal deal, the biggie. Like, we call him Trader Dave for a reason. He wasn't Scouter Dave. He wasn't, you know, Drafter Dave. He was Trader Dave.
But this was troubling to me to read this. Like, all these substandard drafts, and you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Oh, maybe they just had some bad luck or this or that. But you start to wonder, like, were they asleep at the switch a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any way you can read it other than that. I mean, so he says now versus 4 years ago. So you take 4 years ago as, in my opinion, when this, you know, revolution started. Everyone in baseball, I thought, was well up on the analytics game at that point.
Moneyball is an old book now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's even the movie, which came out so many years after. Like, Jonah Hill has lost weight and then gained weight and lost weight and gained weight a bunch of times, even since the movie. Like, It is. It blows my mind that 4 years ago we were just like, nah, we're good on those numbers things.
Gosh. Well, and I think the second theme we're talking about is related to the first theme. I think the analytics might suggest you draft more toolsy guys who can grow. Yeah, they're a little more risky, but the chance of you getting more war out of their big league career is enhanced.
Yeah. You're never going to draft a Mike Trout when you keep drafting Chance Ruffin all the time. I mean, that's what
I like Chance Ruffin, but you're right. I mean, right. You get these high floor guys, right?
Yeah.
And that's not conducive to gaining excellence. Yeah, it's conducive to having a bullpen piece you can run up after 2 years, which was really maybe what the Dave Dombrowski years called for.
Yeah, and, right? And maybe that became a mental thing for Dave. Like, clearly, I haven't been able to address this issue through free agency, through trade, and whatever. I mean, clearly, he was not able right. to do that. Maybe I just keep trying. Let's take this guy out of Texas. Let's take this guy out of Tennessee. And whoever can throw 100 out of the bullpen first right. comes up.
I mean, right. All the Ryan Perrys, of the world.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, are you encouraged by kind of the new approach? Do you have more faith in Al when it comes to the draft?
I think you have to. I don't think there's any way of reading this that would leave you less confident. Here's the thing. So we are now, I feel like, where everyone was probably 4 years ago. Just being in on the analytics game doesn't mean that you're using analytics well. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that we're using them. Now I want to see competence in using them. And, you know, only right. time will tell if we're actually good at using them. But you have to start to be able to be good in the first place. So it is, yep. it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, and this is where you can make some hay with analytics, and that is personnel evaluation and selection. I mean, there's a few things you can do strategy-wise, tactical elements-wise, but a lot of it is evaluating personnel. So I hope it helps. So. Anyway, one more Tigers topic before we get into some nonsense. Torii Hunter returned to Detroit this weekend for the Negro Leagues weekend. He received the Willie Horton Award. And I think it's really neat that they celebrate the Detroit Stars, a lot of the Negro League guys along, and just to celebrate kind of the African-American contributions and culture in baseball, I think is really cool. But what is your take? What is your take on Torii Hunter's legacy in Detroit?
For better or worse, Torii Hunter, at least in my mind, will always be remembered legs up in the Boston bullpen. I mean, right. When I think of the
so
Torii
you
Hunter,
didn't black it out.
No. When I think of the Torii Hunter era in Detroit, that is what I think of. Was he good for us? Yeah, he was a pretty good ball player for us for a couple of years. I mean, clearly he's going to mean more to Minnesota than he will to Detroit. He played a couple of years in the twilight of his career in Detroit. He was good. He was fun. He was personable. But I mean, I don't necessarily think he lit the world on fire when he was here. I mean, I feel like his biggest contribution was kind of making Austin Jackson a little bit better for a few Aprils and Mays to start seasons. I mean, that I don't know.
I appreciate Torii Hunter's contribution on the field, but I never was part of the cult of Torii Hunter, if that makes any sense, because he had this like a personality that preceded him. Oh, he's so fun. He's so charming. And I never really bought into that. I always thought, you know, it's not put on, but I just thought it was a little bit. Oh, you know,
yeah,
I wasn't buying into it wholeheartedly.
I completely agree with that. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you said, he means more to the Twins. He means stuff to the Angels. Yeah, I'm glad he contributed. I don't have any ill will toward him,
no,
but
absolutely not.
I'm not like thinking of his Tigers years. I'm not like all rah-rah about him. They were largely forgettable. I mean, even with his huge, he had some really good years, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, we didn't win a World Series a couple years that we absolutely should have with him. I mean, the year we traded for David Price, we'll never get that year back. That was a year that we not could have won a World Series. We absolutely should have, and we didn't. Yeah. And that's not necessarily his fault, but he certainly is part of that team that's so grossly underachieved.
Right. Yeah, right. If we win the World Series, the script is totally different. Mm-hmm. And we're celebrating him in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Time to move on to things you saw alongside of the road while running.
Actually don't have any stories from the side of the road. Northern Michigan seems to have been doing a good job of not throwing crap out of their windows onto the road. So kudos as far as the lack of littering. I do have a Name That Tiger trivia game for us.
Oh, man, I love these.
Okay, so this is a pitcher. That's not an official clue. That is just giving. So I give Eric clues and he has to guess which tiger I'm referring to. All right. First clue. I was born May 10th, 1986 in Winfield, Illinois.
1986. So this makes this guy like 32. Is that right?
Give or take. Yeah.
Okay. And where? Illinois?
Winfield, Illinois.
Okay, I have a guess. I'm gonna
be so pissed if you get this. Go ahead.
I'm gonna write it on this piece of paper and hold it up to the camera, and so our listeners can play along. Let's see if I.
You were incorrect. He's like 50.
Granderson?
Yes, he was born in like 74. Get out of here with that.
He's not. Well, he's younger than I am. He's gotta be.
That's not saying much. 9/10 of the country.
Okay, so Illinois, and he's about 32. What do you got next?
My middle name is Weber with two B's.
It's not Thad Weber, obviously.
No, that would be a great middle name for Thad. Thad Weber.
His middle name is Weber, and he's a pitcher.
He is a pitcher.
Does he play for us, or can I?
Not anymore.
He's Tigers related.
Yes.
Okay.
I was drafted by the Tigers in the third round of the 2007 draft, and I debuted for the Tigers in 2012 for the big league club, obviously.
Debuted in 12. My name is Weber. Ugh.
I love how you're repeating the middle name is Weber as if that's a clue that'll eventually stimulate.
It's
going to
help me. It's going to help me.
All right. Next.
Maybe their parents were like infatuated by Chris Weber or something, you think?
That feels
is the timeline add up there?
I don't think that works, but maybe.
I don't know. Okay.
I was ejected on July 11th for throwing a first pitch sinker up and into Alexi Ramirez immediately after surrendering a grand slam to noted slugger Josh Fegley.
He was ejected on the first pitch.
Not of the first pitch after Josh Fegley hit a grand slam off of him.
Luke Pekonen.
Ah, you got it.
I can't believe it took me this long to get Lupu. He's my boy.
He is. The other clues, I ended my career with exactly a 0.0 wins above replacement. And in my final season with the Tigers, my ERA was 32.40. I was known for my lack of varied facial expression, and the last clue was Eric really likes me.
It's Lupu. I had a strange infatuation with Luke Pekonen. I wonder what he's up to.
Is it past tense?
Okay, I have an ongoing infatuation with Luke Pekonen. If you know Luke Pekonen, tell him I'm not like stalking him, but like I want him to resurface. Where are you, Lupu?
You have so many connections. You got to be able to get in touch with him.
Somebody's got to know Lupu.
Yeah.
Like, is he retired? Like, is he selling cars or is he real estate or investment planning? Like, those are the big.
I went to a page entitled Luke Patkonen Facts, and there literally was nothing on the list. Like, it was just a blank. I'm assuming it was just he was part of a database that had facts for, you know, any like a fake Wikipedia, if you will. A knockoff Wikipedia, and they literally had no facts for him. So okay. I have nothing to add.
I have to confess, I would feel absolutely horrible if Luke Patkonen that, you know, really had some like emotional health issues or something like that. And just like his face wasn't normally just kind of a somber thing. I'd feel really bad about that. But I genuinely love Luke Patkonen. Like when he came up, like he had good stuff. Like I was kind of digging him. And his constantly sullen expressions are priceless.
The anyway, gif that you made of just a what collage of Lupu faces that was just all the same face. That was one of the most, you know, we all say LOL all the time. I literally laughed out loud when I saw that.
Did you see the death metal Lupu video that I made?
Probably. I don't know. It was a while back, no?
It was a few months that I had strong infatuation with Luke Patkonen. Sorry to the entire Patkonen family.
I'm sure they forgive you.
All right. Moving along. My beef of the week. Something I love is Luke Patkonen. Now I'm going to complain. So I was at the Whitecaps game, and I bought good seats because YOLO. And
Spotify money, you're diversifying your account.
But I happen to be not in the end of a row, but I'm sitting along the crease where the row bends.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. So I don't know how my family's piling in there. I get sat right on the crease, and there happens to be a man about my size. You know, maybe a little bigger, actually. And so the crease is making our legs come together. Not only that, this guy is manspreading. Are you familiar with the concept of manspreading?
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to be too harsh because I'm an admitted manspreader. Right. If I have room for it, you know, I'm spreading those legs. It's comfortable.
Yeah. Why would you not if given the option?
Right. Yeah. Like that's a comfortable way to sit. And for men, that's fine. You know, but this guy is kind of man spreading in my space. So I'm kind of leaning over and kind of occupying half of my kid's seat, which is fine. But it's kind of uncomfortable. And this guy is occupying space that clearly belongs to me. Stop man spreading in my space. You can man spread if it's like ample room, but don't man spread when it's not your space.
Now, did you make any uncomfortable leg to leg contact?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, you kind of like touch his foot, like when I'm trying to move around. And
did he have sweaty legs?
It wasn't altogether pleasant.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure I would have to cut off my own leg if I had leg to leg contact with somebody with a sweaty leg.
Like you won't wear jeans for a second day in a row, let alone touch another man's leg.
Exactly. I have standards.
Absurd standards. Okay, it's fine. I tweeted this. Would you wear shorts on an airplane?
Yes, of course. Only a deviant wouldn't.
But are you not worried about leg-to-leg contact because you're next to, like, somebody?
Well, typically, Whitney will sit in the middle. So I generally will either sit like on the window or on the edge.
So you're making her deal with stranger skin.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, that wasn't the intention, but I guess it's an added bonus.
There you go. Yeah. Anyway,
that's what marriage is all about.
Throwing your spouse under the bus
so that I don't have to talk to a rando on an airplane. Yeah,
that's great. I do the same thing.
that's what kids are for.
They're littler typically, so you get to kind of, you know, infringe on some of their space.
I finally found a reason for them
to procreate.
Someone to put between you and the rando next to you on a flight.
Perfect. And so it's because, like, you can get cotton candy and just have, like, a little bit and justify it because your kid's mowing down.
Cotton candy? You're better than that.
I have a little bit. Like, I'm not going to eat a whole bag, but I have a little taste of cotton candy.
Just wet the beak?
Yeah, that's right. So that's our segments for the week.
Hello, this is Eric's mom, and you're listening to the Podcastianos.
Do we have Twitter questions, Jordan?
Do we have Twitter questions? So many Twitter questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Like we said, if you typically Eric will send out a send us questions tweet, because people see and respond to him far more than me.
He's a little insecure about his Twitter asking.
But you also can send us an email, podcastianos@gmail.com. We actually have one for this week, so don't let me forget to read it out, because I'm pretty sure I had it for last week and forgot.
Okay.
First one comes in from Nicholas Haller. He asks us, does Fulmer need to pull a Mad Max and get some time in Toledo?
No. Especially after his last start. His last start was super good.
Yeah, and have you not seen that Artie Lewicki has started for us twice? If it's not Michael Fulmer, who are we going to start? I mean, we're going to have to sign Miles J off
Carpenter?
The street to come in
no.
and pitch for us.
Miles J. I've had enough Carpenter, too.
Carpenter is not what one would call hashtag good.
Right.
Did I tell you that I'm like 74% sure that the last time we were at Comerica, we were sitting behind Ryan Carpenter's family? They were either that, or they were the only person in the ballpark enthused about watching Ryan Carpenter pitch. Like, they were very into him. You'd have to assume it's somebody that knew him or family or whatever.
Did you have good seats?
We were like three rows behind the bullpen.
It could be his family if the seats were crummy.
Yeah. So I tried to keep my comments to a minimum, and then eventually we moved up to be in the shade. But yeah, it was. Nobody wants to watch Ryan Carpenter pitch. The next one comes in from Peter at Frogtown Tigers. He asks us, what rally animal is the best animal?
Okay, so in baseball, we've had the goose.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Mud Hens who had the possum?
Yeah.
The possum. Also, I feel like there's been the mantis, like a couple years ago.
That was the Royals, right?
Mantis.
So that's clearly the worst. So. Yep.
So I don't know. To me, the criteria are you want something that's going to show up. So, like, you're not going to have a rally elephant. Like, no elephant's just going to come into your ballpark.
It has to be feasible.
Right. And it's got to just, like, stick around for a little bit.
And it can't really endanger anyone, right? I mean, you couldn't have, like, a rally swarm of bees or something.
Rally midges. So I'm thinking, like, a goose is pretty good. I mean, a squirrel. I feel like a squirrel would be good.
Yeah. On the scale, those are probably about your tops. I mean, I don't know. You don't want a pigeon. That's ridiculous.
No, pigeons don't stick around. And they're just like flying rats. Nobody wants them.
Nobody wants them. I don't know.
Goose is good. Squirrel. Rat.
Rabbit. We have a neighborhood rabbit that just shows up like here and there in the neighborhood. I actually kind of like him. I named him Johnson. So now anytime we see a rabbit in the neighborhood, I tell Whitney that there's Johnson.
You're a weird guy, Hall.
I don't necessarily think so, but whatever. All right, let's move on. Anthony Troya asks us, is it me or did we absolutely fleece the Cubs for Jamer Candelario?
I don't think the Cubs anticipated him being quite as productive as he's been.
Quite frankly, neither did we. I mean,
yeah, neither did
we. He's significantly better than even right now in year, like, essentially he's finished about a full year at this point. He is significantly better than even I had any wild dreams for. So, yes.
And we are getting some work out of this kid too. We are running him out there almost every day in the top half of the lineup and expecting big things from him. He's batting cleanup and he's playing a average third base defense or a serviceable third base. The kid's dynamite. So to answer your question, yes, kind of.
And not only that, but he is so demanding on the other starting pitcher too. Like he takes so many pitches even if he doesn't come away with a hit from an at bat, he still contributes almost every time up. It really is something uncommon to see from a hitter his age. Definitely like him. He's hard player to like love, you know what I mean? Like he's clearly a very good player. I just haven't seen enough personality from him, and I don't know, maybe he doesn't speak great English. But I want to love him.
He knows pretty good.
Does he? I just need a little bit more personality from him before I can like fully invest.
Try to check out an interview from him. I've seen him speak for kind of extended periods, and he's engaging. He's a lot of fun.
Is he?
Sure, okay. To catch on.
Yeah. I just,
and not only from that Cubs deal, we got Isaac Paredes from them too on that deal.
By
didn't
all
we?
Accounts, should be a stud. I'm curious if he's going to be small enough for Lynn to like him. I think that's the big question. Yeah.
Paredes is for position players, like top two or three most exciting players that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of Daz Cameron, I mean, then it's Isaac Paredes.
Yeah, for sure. Chinny at Chinny's Twits asks us, do you guys listen to any other baseball podcasts, excluding the 619, of course?
Not faithfully, but I'll listen to the Bless You Boys. I'll listen to Chris and Roger occasionally.
I still haven't listened to the 619. Have they done another episode?
No, I think just the one.
Yeah.
That's worth checking
out. One hit wonders. To be honest, I typically only listen to soccer podcasts. I don't know if that makes me some sort of baseball podcast snob, but I love watching baseball, but talking about baseball and listening to other people talk about baseball just doesn't interest me as much. And I listen to podcasts when I run. Like that's pretty much the only time I listen to podcasts. So I need something that's like constantly taking my mind off of the fact that, oh, I'm running for an hour. So I primarily listen to soccer podcasts. If you want a recommendation for a soccer podcast, I'm your guy. I've listened to them all. Brett Yoder asks us, are you surprised Guardy is actually using some analytics to influence his lineups?
A little bit. I mean, this is kind of best case scenario, I think. I mean, he's not going over and above, but he'll mix in a little bit of analysis.
Yeah, he is more open-minded than I was expecting, which, like you say, is healthy. I don't think he is maximizing the usage.
Correct, yeah.
And it doesn't matter for this year, but I am pleasantly surprised by how much he has used.
I am enjoying Gardenhire a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
I've said that probably a couple times now, but it's true.
I completely agree. Bradley Moyer at Detroit_Brad says, over under on how many 619 podcasts will Green be on before he gets traded or DFA'd? Ouch. Shots fired by Bradley.
Several. Stop being so pessimistic, Bradley.
I mean, he's clearly not getting DFA'd. Like that's absurd. I don't think he's on track to be traded this year. I think the real question here is how many shows they actually make. It's really easy to make like one or two and call it. I would be surprised if they reached six. I feel like 5.5 is kind of my over under.
I would agree with that. I'll take the under.
Seth at this Seth. So it's not any other Seth. It is this specific Seth. He asks us, what free agents will rescue us next year?
It's way too early for that. I don't know.
I mean, there's one clear answer. Actually, there's two clear answers. I'm pretty sure we're going to sign both of Manny Machado and Bryce Harper.
Stop.
So that's probably who will rescue us. Maybe if we DFA Verhagen and then bring him back, he can rescue us.
Right.
Mr. Pagnani? I'm assuming it's Italian. He asks us, is anyone interested in road tripping to see the Tigers play in Cincinnati? I'm probably not going with you. Too many painful memories of Harambe in Cincinnati. But if anyone's interested in that, tweet him at, it's just at MR, like Mr. Pagnani.
I'd seriously want to go visit Great American Ballpark. I mean, I think that would be fun.
And have you seen the Blue Bridge in Cincinnati? I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's a really cool looking bridge. Obviously. Gosh dang it. Obviously it's blue. I have a bit of a fascination with bridges. I really want to walk across the Blue Bridge in Cincinnati. That's kind of a goal of mine. I'll eventually get there.
I have to get to PNC too. That's probably higher on the bucket list.
PNC is the number one baseball related experience I've had. I mean, my three big things in life are baseball, bridges, skyline, and animals. Actually, that's four. And you have baseball, bridges, and skyline from your seat. Like, it's it is really, really something. I highly, highly recommend PNC. Our buddy Jacob Skronik asked us, which player, Tigers player, would be best match for the season's Bachelorette, Becca K?
Do you watch it?
I don't, but there's no way you don't.
I do not. I refuse. I can't be in the same room when The Bachelor is on.
Really?
I cannot tolerate it.
I never would have guessed
and
that.
And I'm not even being facetious. Like, I cannot be in the same room when the show is on because it drives me nuts with, like, this fake manufactured love. It's not even love. It's just a show, and I just can't stand it.
I would have bet every dime that I had that you were a big Bachelorette fan.
No, I can't. I can't take it.
All right. Evan,
but Jacoby Jones is the answer.
Evan Witt at eWitt88 asks us, Artie Lewicki, why?
I think we kind of covered that. Who else?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There simply are no other options.
Lewicki was fine today.
He's actually been okay. Like, I don't think he's a very talented pitcher, but he has been shockingly not terrible over his, what, four-ish appearances so far this year?
He's fine.
Brady asks us, how are babies made?
Go ask your parents.
That's
the safe answer.
And the last one comes from Dominic Fricassa. He says, is anyone else a bit disappointed with the state of our outfield defense, particularly Nick? I know he's still transitioning, but I find myself cringing every time he has to cover any ground to make a play out there.
No, I'm not disappointed with Nick particularly.
Yeah, I actually I'm more impressed with the outfield defense this year than I've been in several years. Martin is an adequate defensive center fielder.
Yeah.
I mean,
when he's paying attention, he can throw too.
Yeah. We've run Rajay Davis out there in center field. Like, we scraped the bottom of the barrel. Jacoby is a pretty decent outfielder. Victor Reyes clearly isn't. I don't have any issues with the outfield defense. It's not good by any stretch, but it's fine. I mean, what more do you want? We are a fine baseball team at this point. No area of the team is more than it's fine.
Yeah.
So,
I feel like you're neglecting an important Twitter question that we got, and that is from Zach at Montana Bad Boy. He asks, "What exactly is a bung hammer? Are you familiar with why this question is a question?"
I have to admit, the reference skipped over me.
Here we go. So they announced it last night at the Whitecaps game. This is the West Michigan Whitecaps. And for a game, they're doing what a lot of minor league teams are doing, and that they're changing their name for a day as kind of a gimmick. So they had a big video. And so for one game in August, they will be the Beer City Bunghammers. And they had the whole shop was full of bunghammer gear. Some of it was cool and some of it was eh. So he's asking the question, what exactly is a bunghammer? Well, let me tell you.
You would know the answer to this.
Of course. A bunghammer is for pounding the bung into the bunghole. Right? So you have a barrel full of beer. This is a wooden barrel. How do you get the beer into the wooden barrel? Well, there's a hole. You get the bung hole, right? It's a hole in the barrel. So you fill up the barrel with beer through the bung hole, and then you take the bung, which is a wooden plug, and you position it in the bung hole. And how do you seal it? You take this gigantic hammer, which is the bung hammer, and you smack the bung until it jams and seals the bung hole. It's thus sealing your beer.
You learn something new every day.
All right. So I understand the premise of the name change. But do you find any peculiar overtones with the naming of the bunghammers?
I don't. Do you?
No.
Not in the slightest. I got to check out the gear. That's something I would invest in.
The hats are super cool. they're really cool. And they had this kind of yellowish bunghammer shirt. And I was a little tempted to get it. But, you know, I'm trying to reconcile the bung overtones with the bunghammers. I suppose go big or go home, right? Yeah. With the name.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, yeah. It's just like... Peculiar. I don't know.
Peculiar. That does feel like it sums it up pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the reason for the question about the bunghammers. Check out, I think it's bunghammers.com, and you can see, I better preview that, make sure. Make sure it's safe.
Yeah, I don't think we've had an explicit tag on any of our shows. This one might draw the first.
No, it's not. It's a completely normal thing that normal people talk about. No, that don't go to bunghammer.com. I don't think it's something like that. Anyway, I'll look it up and I'll tweet it. But this was huge with the Whitecaps last night. They're showing videos and promoting it and modeling their gear. It's a thing.
In my experience, if you have to say that it's something that normal people talk about, there's a pretty good chance that it is not, in fact, something that normal people talk about. But... here we are. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can on Twitter. I am at JordanHall23. Eric is at Comeric Eric, and the show is at Podcastianos. If you want to come to the first annual podcast meetup in Grand Rapids, I have some info. I just pulled up a graphic that Raj made. This is what it says. Hook Slide from the Voice of the Turtle podcast. Roger and Chris from the Tigers Sports Radio Detroit show. Jordan and Eric from the Podcastianos. Special guests from the Whitecaps. And you can listen live on sportsradiodetroit.com starting at 4:30. Yeah, come along. Come watch the Whitecaps play the Dayton Dragons. Get your bunghammer hat. And it'll be a good time. Where did I cut off in the... Leave us a review. I don't remember where all I was. And remember... Email podcastianos@gmail.com with your World Cup predictions, all the things that I mentioned earlier, and win yourself that Jeff Coburnus baseball. I got it right here. He imaginarily points to a baseball that's on the floor, but I'm just kidding. It's in a box. I'll have to look for that bad boy. Eric, anything else to say to the people before we get out of here for the week?
Yes, it's bunghammersplural.com.
When just bunghammers. One bunghammer isn't enough.
Yeah, bunghammers.com, and you can, and the subtitle is Hitting the Sweet Spot.
Gosh, what is wrong with people?
And they have why, they have bunghammer gear. The little logo is a pint glass, mostly full of beer, swinging a bunghammer and hitting a bung. It's got its tongue sticking out. It's pretty good.
All right. With that being said, we will catch you guys next week. And eat 'em up, Tigers. Eat 'em up.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.